The views expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Everybody, Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my friend Ray Allen, Ray Engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. We were supposed to get some rain. It was very strange. I walked out of the studio after one yesterday, and it all overcast. It was kind of sprinkling, and then things just sort of didn't materialize. Well, maybe we've got a chance today, and then things are going to kind of sort of taper down a little bit. Hopefully the summer rainy season will get back in full bloom again, because we certainly need the moisture. The Buckmaster Show Midweek Edition, it's August 22nd, 2018, and for me it kind of feels like a Thursday, because just two more shows here and then I'll be heading off to check out Mount McKinley, Denali, also known as Mount McKinley, the highest mountain in North America. And our friend Tim Steller at the Arizona Daily Star, he and his lovely wife just got back from basically the same trip we're going to do. And unfortunately, Rahina Romero, Tim did not see the mountain the whole time.
What?
they were up there,
oh,
I think,
no.
For like 5 days. It was like rain every day. So I'm hoping there will be at least, and the weather shows, you know, some days there, hopefully we're going to get some sun.
Better
and
get your poncho.
Yeah, oh yeah. And to get a glimpse, because I've always wanted to see Mount McKinley. It will be really something to see. Rahina Romero is with me in studio. She is the Democratic Ward 1 councilwoman. Rahina, how is your summer going? We're getting ready to wind down here. I know you and the family were able to get away for just a couple of days.
Yes, we were. Not a big long vacation as we would have liked, but we are very fortunate to live in a geographically amazing place like Tucson, where in 3 hours we can get to Rocky Point, Puerto Peñasco, and enjoy the beautiful beach in Puerto Peñasco. So we did
technically
that.
Technically, you're going to be
the
by the ocean.
School.
I mean, it's the Gulf.
Right.
I
it's
realize,
Gulf.
But it's still it's salt.
It's
water.
A beach.
Yes. Yeah.
The sand is there and the water's there, mm-hmm. and it's near us. So the kids started school, TUSD schools, and they're very happy. We're all starting our activities. It really wasn't much of a vacation summer, but because there's a lot of work to do, but we were able to get away for a few days.
Well, you have such a full agenda. You've got your consul work, and then you have your work at the Center for Biological Diversity, and of course over at the center, very busy over there, my friend.
Yes.
Randy and the team trying to stop the Rosemont
Mine. Yeah, the Center for Biological Diversity has been, through our amazing friend Randy Seraglio, have been able to work hard and diligently to avoid the Rosemont
11,
Mine.
11 years.
11 years it's been going on. And one of the many, many reasons why the Rosemont Mine has been stopped is because of environmental diversity, biodiversity, and concerns about our water systems. It has been a long journey. I know that Pima County has been very involved with this, the Center for Biological Diversity, the Native Nations in the area have been very adamantly opposed to building a mine in their native lands.
And so much depends on with HUD Bay being the large Toronto, Ontario, Canada-based mineral company. They have holdings all over the world, and you know they're watching every day the way copper prices have been fluctuating, and right now copper prices are down.
Right.
So then that doesn't give them as much of a sense of urgency,
right,
to
and
push it forward.
We're concerned at the Center for Biological Diversity and elsewhere, we're concerned about the friendliness about this particular Trump administration to give permits where environmental studies have not been completed. So we just want to make sure that we're diligently working our team at the Center for Biological Diversity, along with so many different organizations that are working to make sure that, you know, our land, so the biodiversity in our land is preserved.
You've got your full-time job there, and you've got your full-time job
with my babies and with the city council.
And as a mom and everything. And the I noticed you posted on your Facebook page about the comment period has been extended for the F-35. So you were encouraging all of your Ward 1 constituents, your residents, to let folks know how they feel about it. How do you feel about the noise level with the F-35?
I'm very concerned. I'm very concerned, to be honest with you, not because I say I'm very concerned. A lot of people confuse saying that we're concerned about the F-35s and the noise that those could bring to Tucson with not being supportive of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base. As a matter of fact, you know, I grew up in Yuma with the Marine Air Station. Tucson has a long, long history of being a military town, starting with El Presidio de Tucson and the Fort Lowell days, and Tucson has been able to coexist with Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, and we're very happy about the economy that it brings to our community. But to be honest with you, I'm very concerned.
You could say no to the F-35, but that wouldn't mean you're saying no to Davis-Monthan. Is that what I'm hearing you
right.
say?
Right. My concern is that, you know, we are a very urban Air Force Davis-Monthan is very urban, and so any movement in the missions for Davis-Monthan Air Force could really impact the quality of life of Tucson residents. So I'm supportive of the A-10 mission, and I really want to make sure that the residents have an opportunity to voice their concerns.
Now, what about the last time you were here with us, you were talking about equal distribution for road money. The voters did approve more money to go to Tucson Roads. Is that now being equally distributed among the six wards?
Yes, it's going to be equitably distributed to every ward in the city of Tucson. And I had noted to you that there was a huge discrepancy between funding from one ward to the others. And the commission or the committee that that decides on how to distribute those funds throughout the city actually heard our pleas, not just mine, but the residents throughout the city.
Ward 6 in Midtown Tucson, for example, was going to get nearly $7 million in road repairs in the first year of the funding, while your West Side district was only to get just over $1 million.
Yes, and it wasn't just Ward 1. It was actually Ward 3, Ward 2, and Ward 4 and 5 were equally impacted. And so my points that I brought to the commission was, wait a minute, you know, you have to think about equitable distribution throughout the city, because that's what we promised voters, right? So they heard are pleased to do the right thing, and really decided to make sure that every ward was receiving equal amounts of funding. So I'm really happy about that.
Yeah, because this is quite a bit of money, and the city is putting a lot of work into the roads. I see road work going on all over town.
It's looking very, so much
it
better.
It is looking better. And
it really
one
is.
Of my pet peeves was certainly Tucson Boulevard from Fort Lowell to Speedway. That's been taken care of. That looks
Grant
so
Road
much better.
Grant Road has been looking much better.
Grant looks better. A big one for me was Country Club.
Oh, my word,
it was
yes.
a disaster
right.
from around Speedway again over to Fort Lowell. I would do everything I could to avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's good.
Right, and we still have more to go. You know, we're doing residential. That's Prop 101. Prop mm-hmm. 409 was a bond-funded, voter-approved. Prop 101 was our police and roads. And now, because of the way that the mayor and council and our city administration has been handling in such a professional and wonderful manner our voter-approved funds, now we think at the mayor and council level that the community will be very open to Prop 407, which is our parks and connections bond.
And we're going to pick up on that after we take the break. But right now I want to tell people, Regina Romero, about my favorite bakery in town.
Yes, I love bread.
Oh, yes. The fresh bread comes out of the oven very early. Owner Steve up at Mona's Danish Bakery. Make sure that bread, and there's a wide variety of choices for you for your sandwich right now if you go by Mona's. And Steve will gladly throw in a bag of chips for you on the house. Just say you were listening to the Buckmaster Show. I love the brownies that they do for dessert.
Oh my goodness.
We're talking.
Why didn't you bring some today?
I should have. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. If you don't know what a Danish Kringle is, go by, have a piece, take one home. You'll know after you have one. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise. Go to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link to Mona's Danish Bakery and a link to all of the great partners that we have on this program. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on Celebrity Cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an Ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us Thursday during the noon hour for a newsmaker interview with Dustin Williams. Mr. Williams is the superintendent of schools for Pima County. Also, we'll talk with the Arizona Daily Star columnist David Layton, who writes the Street Smarts column. Buckmaster during the noon hour, AM 1030 KVOI, worldwide live listening, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, about 12:20 in a few seconds here exactly, in our midweek addiction. Oh, it could be. midweek.
We are addicted to you, Bill Buckmaster.
Thank you very much, Rahina Romero. Our midweek addition with Rahina Romero, Democrat, Ward Number 1, City of Tucson. And of course, the big bond election is coming up. A $225 million bond sale for the city parks is being proposed. Rahina, this would be the first makeover in our parks in a generation.
In, I would say, 18 years.
Yeah.
In 18 years, because as I recall it, the last City of Tucson Parks bond was back in 2000, I believe.
Well, you grew up in town, and you recall...
Well, I finished growing up in town because I'm originally from Yuma,
okay,
Arizona.
Okay, but when did you arrive?
I was 17 when I first got here to Tucson. So I've been in Tucson more... I'm not going to say how many years,
okay,
but more than...
People, yeah, okay.
More than... Because then people...
I know.
Do math.
Do the math.
But I've been much more here. This is my town. I love it.
But you
my kids are born here.
You remember a day when our parks were really a kind of the crown jewel.
Yes.
That's
and
where I'm going
our
with
neighborhood
this.
Centers. Our neighborhood centers.
They've deteriorated.
Yes. And, you know, throughout the Great Recession, all of our infrastructure deteriorated, to be honest with you. But the parks... The Parks Department, even though it's on our city charter, our constitution, that it is the responsibility of our city to take care of public safety, transit and transportation, and our parks, it's on our charter, the Parks Department suffered a huge blow mm-hmm. when the recession hit the ground.
Stuff and was so just backburnered.
Because we really, to be honest, we gave a priority to trying to protect the public safety department as much as we possibly could. So the Parks Department suffered. We cut from our Parks Department almost 50% of the funding. And so...
So maintenance, all of the maintenance and operation was delayed.
Swimming pools were closed. Remember that time? Mm-hmm. There's still some that are closed. Yeah. We need to reopen them, redo them. You know, the infrastructure for our park system is very important to the quality of life. And it is a huge prevention mechanism when it comes to our soccer fields, football fields, recreation centers, senior centers, playground for our children. Many families go to the park. It's free and open to the public. They don't need to pay anything. Their taxes that they pay the city.
I use one of the facilities regularly. I'm a big fan of the Udall Center.
Yes.
And this is such a detailed plan. Brent Dennis, your new parks guy, I was very impressed with him. We're going to have him back on the show. But he has such a detailed plan of where every dime is going
to
go.
And to be honest with you, Bill.
Including the redoing the track where I walk right. over at the Udall Center. I mean, he's got all these little, you know, details.
And
in the
and those were the marching orders that Mayor and Council gave our city manager and our team putting this, including Brent. We wanted to make sure that we delineated the projects as much as we possibly could, put a budget on each project, and then make sure that we create an advisory committee that will make sure that the funds are going to go where we told the community they're going to go. And so we wanted to make sure that we had this level of detail so that people know exactly where it's going. And it's actually going to go very equitably into the entire city of Tucson. It includes our connections funds as well, because nowadays, what we want to...
What's this connection? Connection.
So it's $128 million for our parks.
Okay.
Proper parks, right? Mm-hmm. Our aquatics right. facilities, neighborhood and community centers, neighborhood and community parks, recreation centers, sports fields and lighting, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Our connections basically are the pedestrian safety and walkability, shared use paths, protected bike lanes, and bicycle boulevards. And what our thought in this is that it's not just building the infrastructures on the parks, but it's also how people get to them mm-hmm. and creating safe connections to our park system is equally important, because people can bike there, can walk there, and drive there. But we want to make sure that people have the capacity to get on their bike from their home and connect safely to their neighborhood park or their regional park. And so that investment, too, is equally important.
All right. Let's see if we can get Lori's question in. It's on topic here about the parks. Lori, go ahead. You're with Rahina Romero.
Yeah, so I've seen some roving billboards, like that, you know, it's a billboard that's put on a big truck, mm-hmm. and it says, we like parks, do you?
Hmm.
Or okay. something like that. And I'm wondering who's paying for that and who's behind that movement.
I hadn't heard about these mobile you know, we like parks, do you? Maybe.
Hi, Lori. Yeah. Thank you so much for your question. I haven't seen them mm-hmm. Around, to be honest with you. So I really don't know if there's independent...
Like an individual
independent campaign.
They're pretty big. They're probably close to the size of a billboard,
huh.
you know, on the back of a truck.
Wow. Rahina will look into it.
We will. We will look into it for you. I'm glad that you brought it up.
Yeah. Thank you, Lori. Matthew wants to go off topic, and that's okay. He wants to mention city courts. Hello, Matthew.
Yeah, and if you don't know, I understand. It's a subject that seems to, one minute, have attention. Originally, we were going to work with the county, possibly, on co-locating or consolidating. I'm just curious, is that still a topic of conversation with the status of city courts?
Thanks. Yes, Matthew, thank you so much for your question. That, you know, as you might be aware, city courts, courts on their own are complicated. There's a lot of state laws that we have to make sure that we abide by. The conversation has been whether co-locating with Pima County in their new courts building downtown or consolidating. And that is something that the conversation is still being had. It's very complicated. There's a lot of nuances to the issue. And the county administrators,
it
could be a cost savings up to $1 million.
Yeah.
And one of the things that the mayor and council have focused on is that we want to make sure that our specialty courts are preserved, because those are nationally recognized courts. We have a mental health court, a domestic violence court, and we want to make sure that we preserve those courts. So there are opportunities for savings. There are opportunities between the city and the county in whether it's co-locating or consolidating and making sure that we're offering the community region-wide one area where they could do all of their courts business within our city. So it's long and complicated. There's a lot of nuances, but there might be really good outcomes from this conversation. So it's ongoing. Thank you, Matthew.
All right. One of the issues, and we have very little time left, is the smoking issue. That's been talked about, raising the age for purchase of tobacco products to 21 in the city. Do you think that would be a good idea?
Yes, I do think it's a good idea. I think that anything that we could possibly do to help young people not turn to vices and cigarette smoking is a good idea. It is smoking is affecting real effects of our young people, and especially at when you've been smoking for 10, 15 years, you could see the health effects and the health issues that smoking brings to individuals and to families, because secondhand smoke is equally bad for people that are surround the smoker. So anything
were
that we could
do. Were you ever a smoker?
I actually, yes, I was.
Were you really?
And I picked it up when I was 15. Mm. And so, you know, I've been smoke-free for the past 6 years, thank goodness. And I feel so much better. And the good thing is that your lungs regenerate, you get better after you quit smoking. And so as an ex-smoker, I can easily say if I wish, you know, my community would have made it harder for me to pick up that first cigarette, because it was very hard to let go.
All right, Rahina Romero, thank you very much. Good to see you. And we'll talk again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me, Bill.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Experience the new era of Arizona football. New coach Kevin Sumlin, lower season and individual game ticket pricing, new stadium amenities and concession options, more pride of Arizona, and a new stadium announcer. Plus, explosive plays on the field that will create lots more fireworks. Go to ArizonaWildcats.com/FB for tickets or call 621-CATS. That's ArizonaWildcats.com/FB or 520-621-CATS.
This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Wednesday afternoon on the Buckmaster Show. We're on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for local news and talk. And of course, KVOI.com and my website, BuckmasterShow.com. And that's where you can hear our program live, with what we call live streaming or worldwide live listening, pretty much anywhere, as long as you've got a computer. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's only about a three-hour drive from the Metro Tucson area, and once you're over there, you're going to discover a beautiful area, especially this time of year. Their elevation is pretty much the same as Denver, Colorado, and we all know Denver's the mile-high city. So Silver City's got that great cool nights and warm days this time of year. And again, the forest, the Gila, really greening up very nicely. Starting place, I suggest southwestnewmexico.org for the complete list of great places to stay and great recreation opportunities in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Today's news media landscape consists of more choices than ever before. Boy, do we know that to be true. How young people go about selecting the news they consume in this environment of information overload may make a difference in the way they participate in politics, according to new research by a sociology doctoral student at the University of Arizona. Her name is Samantha. She goes by Sam Scoville, and she presented the research recently at the American Sociological Association's annual meeting in Philadelphia. Let's welcome Sam now to the Buckmaster Show. Sam, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing real well. Have people always called you Sam, or when did that nickname, when you were a little kid, or what?
It's actually gone through a few iterations. I started with Sammy, and then as I've gotten older, I've sort of decided on the more simplistic Sam.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from originally?
I am from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and then did undergrad in Western Massachusetts at Smith College. So I'm pretty much a Massachusetts, like, homegrown native.
Well, your research is fascinating, especially to those of us who are in the information business, because it's something we talk about here at the station, about where are, like, millennials getting their news. Why did you decide to zero in on this research? And I'm glad you did, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. So this actually came out of just a general interest that I have in political participation, but more specifically, a lot of my work and my research interests are around social movement participation and sort of how we think about what social movement participation is, what activism is. And I took a class my first year of graduate school that was taught by my advisor, Jennifer Earl, and the political communication professor, Kate Kensky, where they were really intentionally putting together political communication literature with social movements literature to see how these two fields could inform one another, because for communication scholars, like, audiences are a huge deal. They talk a lot about media effects, but we don't sort of see that same line of study in a lot of the social movements literature. And so during this class, my advisor sent me a link to this youth participatory politics data set and basically asked me, like, what I could do with it and if I could find something interesting in it. So I sort of dove into it And there was a lot of really great data in there about different forms of engagement, really specific forms of engagement, like voting, protests, and campaigning, going over things like online petitions, boycotts, going to rallies. And so I thought about, well, why don't I see how news consumption might impact this participation, since a lot of the way we find out about these things going on and like about politics in general is right through the news media. So I thought to look and sort of differentiate how that might impact the types of engagement young people chose.
Well, you're studying certainly with one of the best. Dr. Kate Kensky is a personal friend. She's probably one of the best in the communication business and academia in the country, and she has a great reputation. So you're very lucky there, Sam.
Yeah, it's been really great working with her on this project.
Okay, let's delve into this now. So what are the different ways that young folks are getting their news?
Yeah, so there actually wasn't a ton that I was finding specifically on how they were choosing to consume their news, but in the social movements and political participation literature, there was a lot on forms of engagement. So like how young people are changing the way that they think about citizenship. So a dutiful model of citizenship posited that like essentially there are young people that would center voting as the main form of participation and also consume mass media. And then there is this more embedded or engaged or actualized form of citizenship where young people are doing a lot more of, they're engaging in more agentic processes. So they're going out and choosing which forms of activism or engagement politically that they want to do, sort of separate from traditional modes of participation. But there wasn't really anything that I was finding about like, well, what does that mean for how they're choosing news? I mean, we talk a lot about how people are getting things through social media, and in a lot of volunteer work I've done with young people in this age group, I asked like a group that I did a workshop with, like, where do you all get your where do you get your news from? Where are you selecting it? And everyone in the room said Facebook.
You're
all
kidding.
All of them said it. Yeah, everything. All 12 of them. I think it was between 12 and 15 of them were like, yeah, we go to Facebook when we want our news. And so I just through this project started thinking about like, well, what are a few ways that people are selecting? And I knew like Facebook and Twitter and social media sites were one. So I had this like idea of social mediated selection, and then the elite mediated selection is like, well, what are elite traditional forms of news media, like the mass media, like radio, TV, newspapers. And so that was sort of my elite mediated one. And then there were all of these variables talking about ways that seemed very agentic and people were self-selecting. And so that's sort of where that category came out of, was how are people choosing their media themselves rather than going to a traditional newspaper like the New York Times and just like trusting that source, or just going to Facebook to find it. So that's sort of where I came up with those ideas.
And of course, I think ideally it would be nice to have a well-rounded look at the news consumption. In other words, somebody sampling traditional, or as you call it, elite media, also getting social media involved, rather than exclusively, like you said, this group of a dozen or so young people, oh, we just get our information from Facebook.
Yeah, well, and it also is that, like, a lot of the time on Facebook, they could be coming across these traditional news sites, right? So if someone on their friends list shares a New York Times article, then they might be reading the same thing that if they had just chosen to self-select, or if they just chose elite media. And so I think that there's probably some interesting overlap where, like, your Facebook network or your social media network actually matters for which forms of this you're actually seeing. But the way I think about it is like trusting your social networks to give you what you need.
And when we're talking young folks here, we're saying, what is your age group that you were zeroing in on, Sam?
15 to 25-year-olds. And the data was collected in 2011. This is the first wave of three that this survey research group is doing. The only one accessible to the public right now is that first wave. But so people that are millennial generation, it doesn't cover Gen Z, the younger folks, but it's the sort of like the millennial age group essentially.
So in many ways, you know, what you're saying is if they are like exclusively getting looks at Facebook, they are hopefully being exposed to some of the so-called elite media that they can at least sample, correct?
Yeah, and that's what I would hope. But it really, I think, unfortunately, with Facebook's privacy and access, it's hard for researchers to actually get a lot of access to Facebook data. In an ideal world, I would love to be able to like sit down and just like see what people's timelines look like, because I think that that's really important for how it might politicize you. Because if you don't see news on your Facebook timeline, then like that obviously has implications versus someone who is super embedded in already really political networks and they're seeing lots of different forms of news all the time. So I'm sure that people's timelines just are very different looking depending on who they're friends with.
Now, were these folks, the younger, the people you were looking at, did they seem to be interested in political engagement, Sam?
Overall, both the news consumption and the political participation were both extremely low. When I sort of looked at just like the overarching trends, it was more people in the like 0 to 2 or 3 types of engagement in activism or protest or campaigning. There was typically like you went maybe like once in the last 6 months. And then for news consumption, people were consuming on an average of like 1 to 2 days, because they were asked on the survey, how many days a week do you get news from these following sources? And so the most actually was elite media, which was about 2 days per week young people were getting their news from those sources. So I was actually quite surprised that was actually in this data set where most people were actually going to get their news.
So much of where they are hearing information is through social media, through Facebook and Twitter and other sources, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Okay. So the kind of the takeaway message, Sam Scovell, would be what? What would the takeaway from all this be?
I think that it would be that we have to think about how news media relates to particular forms of engagement and like what those relationships mean. So how does engaging in processes where young people have agency and they're going and they're intentionally selecting news media themselves and like signing up for Google alerts from particular news sites, like that has real implications for a lot of extra institutional engagement and high risk engagement. But also that it seems like elite media actually still really matters for engagement in institutional processes like voting. There was a relationship between those types of news consumption and engagement. And I think we should further critique and expand and think about what actually is happening on social media, because my results indicated that it had very little impact on any form of political participation. But I think that while that's true, might not be the whole picture.
All right, Sam Scovell, thank you very much. Sam, your research as a sociology doctoral student at the University of Arizona, very much appreciate the time, Sam. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All righty. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and one of our great sponsors is Green Things, and we want to tell all of our Green Things fans that over on their 13-acre site, they now are home to Zocalo. For years, Zocalo was over near the intersection of Broadway and Country Club, and Zocalo had a fantastic selection of Mexican and Latin American and some European items. Well, they have moved all of the merchandise over to Green Things. So now you can do all of your gardening needs and pick up some great things for not only outside of your home, forms of pottery and all these wonderful things, but great things for the interior of your home as well. Check out greenthingsaz.com. Let's welcome now Anthony Jimeno of All Sports Tucson. He is also the allsportstucson.com, a great site that's doing very well, and Anthony also is one of our 24 contributors to the Buckmaster Show. He covers all sorts of Wildcat activity, and of course, this time of year, it's football time. And Anthony, we had the president of the University of Arizona with us for a half an hour on the show Monday, and I know he loves football, as do I, and we were talking about that Sports Illustrated cover jinx with Khalil Tate, and he's hoping that is not the case. And the game we kept talking about and pointing to was the Houston matchup, which gets underway at, I think, 11 o'clock Tucson time in a couple of weeks. Yeah.
It is 11 o'clock Central time.
Oh, that's even worse.
Well, it's 9 o'clock start here in Tucson. I guess the good news out of that is it's going to be a nationally broadcast game early in the morning. It's really going to kind of be one of the feature games of that time slot. So everybody always complains about, oh, well, Arizona's always, their games start at 11 o'clock at night on the East Coast and things like that. Well, this game isn't. And for those people across the country who may not usually get to see Arizona because of the channel it is on or the time the game starts, this is a big opportunity. And there's so much intrigue because of Khalil Tate. There will be double for Kevin Sumlin, not only because he's new to Arizona, but because he'll be coaching at his old school where he was first a head coach. And then there's the other intrigue that Houston has, the guy who probably is the early favorite to be the top pick in the 2019 NFL draft, which is Ed Oliver, who's a crazy, strong, athletic, fast defensive tackle. So there's that game, even though the time is really unusual for Arizona, it does serve its purpose in that there's going to be a big spotlight on it.
Arizona could easily, well, not easily, because they do have to get by Houston, but then there's, I think, Oregon State. You've got BYU, Houston, Oregon State at home, and Oregon State is picked, I think, last in West Coast football.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, and then you've got, you could have a matchup with USC coming to town, and that could really be big, bode well for the Cats. Well, actually, I missed a game. Okay, it's
Southern Utah.
Yeah.
Southern Utah. You got that game in there.
Okay.
So, and that's why I think the Houston game is so critical, is that really sets up the rest of, at least the rest of the month. You know, don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. But that game there seems like the biggest toss-up of the first four. And as you mentioned, Oregon State's generally picked to be the worst team in the Pac-12. So, even though that's on the road, you got to put that one as, if you're an Arizona fan, you say, yeah, we got to win that game and we should win that game. So then Arizona's 4-0 going into USC. USC could very well be, you know, they already start the season ranked 15th in AP poll. They've got some tough games early. They got Stanford, they have Texas. Again, if you're an Arizona fan, you want USC to win those games, and you go into that home game here in late September with USC ranked, Arizona 4-0, they probably would be ranked themselves. And then that's a huge game. It's getting, that's another national spotlight game. And because it's in the Pac-12 South, Arizona wins that, they'd be the early leader to win the South. They'd have essentially two games up on USC, considering the head-to-head win. So that's September could be awfully interesting.
We've got four.
Disappointing too, but it could be interesting.
Yeah, we've got four of the AP top 25 teams have Pac-12 teams. Of course, Washington. ESPN has been talking about Washington as one of the big picks to go to the championship game of college football. I mean, that, we're lucky Arizona does not play Washington this time around. But so you've got four. You've got Oregon is in there. You got USC and Stanford, and of course Washington. So how far out did you put Arizona outside that top 25, Anthony Gimeno?
Well, for Lindy's, I picked Arizona. I think I had Arizona 34th. You know, they did receive some points in the AP poll, which means they were on several ballots out of the 65 or so I think there are in the AP. So they ended up 31st if you add up the points in the AP poll, and that's perfectly right. Again, if somebody put Arizona in a preseason top 25, I would not argue a bit. I actually did that once in the preseason when I did one of those super early top 25, yeah, like right after the championship game, which is such a silly exercise, but we do it anyway.
Yeah.
It's certainly not crazy. I think they're once you start trying to, if you're doing a ranking or doing a poll and you get down to those last few spots, 23 through 25, what always happens is you've got about 15 teams you're considering to try to shoehorn into those last few spots. And Arizona certainly deserves to be one of them. And like I said, if somebody considers Arizona a top 25 team right now, you know, in the preseason on paper, based on who they have coming back, based on Khalil Tate, based on Kevin Sumlin, based on a very favorable schedule, I'd say you're well within your logic box to say that. So I think it's we'll circle back and say, yep, that's why I think September could be really interesting.
How about basketball? I've got 1 minute to go, and of course there was that arrest of the young man on an extreme drunken driving. Ira Lee. How big a blow would that be if Ira Lee is not on the squad?
Well, they don't have, unlike Arizona teams the last few years, they don't have a lot of front court depth. There's Chase Jeter, who's the 6'10", 6'11", transfer from Duke. There's a power forward, Ryan Luther, grad transfer from Pitt. Then there was supposed to be Ira Lee. And in terms of kind of legit front court players, that's about it. Otherwise, kind of more of a wing like Emmanuel Aycott, probably has to play a lot of the four. So Ira Lee's on paper is scheduled to be an important part of this team because of his size. So we'll see how Sean Miller and the university deals with him and his super extreme DUI. It's really going to force, either way, Sean Miller is going to have to play kind of a smaller, quicker lineup this year. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
Okay. Anthony Jimeno, will look for your work and your team at allsportstucson.com, which is doing very well, correct?
It is. Appreciate you mentioning it.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
Thanks, Bill.
All right. Coming up this afternoon, Mike Check with Mike Shaw, Ray Allen helping out. Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9 in the morning, and then me, Bill Buckmaster. Back with you tomorrow. Dustin Williams will be with us. He's the superintendent of schools in Pima County, among other interviews. We'll be hoping you have a great afternoon and evening. Until then, I'm Bill Buckmaster and Ray Allen. Have a good one.